There is a special church in Luxor, Egypt, and it's on a street that is named Hatshepsut. Everyone knows where the street is because it's named after a very famous queen. There were only three women who were ever queens in Egypt, and one of them was Hatshepsut. In actuality, we could say that she was an infamous queen because of the things she did. At the death of her husband, she usurped the throne and established her rule over the people. And in order to maintain her strength as absolute ruler, she dressed in men's apparel, wore a false beard, and had statues erected of herself in the appearance of a man, without breasts, and dressed as a warrior. She chose attributes to describe herself, such as son of the sun and lord of two lands. It was Hatshepsut who created the image of the obelisk, you know, like the one that's in Washington, D.C., and they have them all over the world. And from this image that she created to represent the god Amon, all of the steeples, towers, and minarets on the mosques in all of the world evolved from this obelisk. And this obelisk she created to resemble the male sexual organ. This wicked and ruthless woman epitomized all women who would wish to be men. She was truly the mother of all lesbians that were to come. And she came out of Egypt. You know, Egypt holds a very special place in history. It was one of the greatest civilizations of all time. Its mysteries have sparked such controversy. And entire fields of education have been invented and created to study Egypt. Egypt also holds a special place in the Bible. For all through the writings of the prophets, we see reference to Egypt and its effect on the nations around it, and upon Israel in particular. Many times the Word of God accuses Israel with these words, "You learned it in Egypt." God took the children of Jacob out of Egypt, but he could not get Egypt out of their hearts and minds. All of Israel's pagan worship can be directly or indirectly traced back to the religion of Egypt. Today we're going to talk about the pagan woman. And I have chosen the country of Egypt and the religion of Egypt to speak about because it epitomized paganism. They say that the Egyptian religion was one of the closest religions to pure witchcraft that existed of all time. And it's one of the purest forms of paganism. Goes back to the Tower of Babel. Really, you know, there was no pagan religion before the flood. There's no reference to anyone worshiping idols. And after the flood, it was Nimrod and Semiramis's wife who invented the first pagan religion. And at the Tower of Babel, when the languages were all confused, the people took with them this system of religion with certain idols and certain power plays and took it all over the world, gave them different names. But all pagan religions can be traced back to the Tower of Babel. And we don't really have as much information about that religion as we have about the Egyptian religion. But the archaeologists and the experts tell us that Egypt's religion was the closest to the purest first pagan religion of all that exist. One day in Jordan, I was praying, and we were going to Egypt on a trip. I had been once before, and I was looking forward to it because I really love the people in Egypt. They're so wonderful, such sweet, tender-hearted people, and very talented. And so I was praying, and the Lord spoke to me and said to me, "When you get to Egypt, I want you to look for a book." A book? And then he said to me, I want you to look for a book about customs, about makeup and jewelry, and the customs of Egypt. Well, I want you to know that Egypt is not a very educated country. In Egypt, they are not renowned for writing books. So you would never think to look for a book in Egypt. But the Lord told me to look for a book. He said these words to me, I am going to show you something that you have not seen before. That's it. So when I got to Egypt, we were staying in a hotel in Cairo, and there was a little store downstairs with souvenirs and everything. And I thought, oh, I'll go down there to the souvenir store. And up on the shelf were some books. And I began to look through the books. I would never have looked through the books if God had not told me to look for a book. But I looked through the books, and there I found a book on the history of the customs and the makeup and the jewelry of Egypt. Exactly what God had told me to look for, and it was waiting on the shelf. It was so old, it had been there so long, that they had to raise the price. It was almost like giving it away. The prices had changed, and he said, oh, I can't give it to you for this, and he raised the price. But God kept that book on that shelf till I could get there because he wanted to show me something I didn't know. And that's what I want to share with you, is some of the things that God has shown me that I didn't know before. When God condemned the women of Israel for their wanton ways and dress, he referred to Egypt as the source of their debauchery and harlotry. In Ezekiel 23, the Lord tells the story of two Hebrew girls who were captive in Egypt. He names them Aholah and Aholibah. And I hope that you will go home and study these stories. You'll get so much more out of it than just listening. But these girls, he said, were captive and they were raped and molested in Egypt when they were captive. And when they were set free from their captivity, they became the wives of Jehovah. God took them like his own wives. One of them was Aholah, who represented Samaria, that was the capital of Israel. The other was Aholibah, her younger sister, who represented Jerusalem, or the capital of Judah. Now, actually, these were the two parts of the divided kingdom, Israel and Judah. And instead of being grateful to this kind husband who had set them free, given them riches, made them really honorable women, these women continued in their harlotry after they were married, and they committed adultery with the neighbors around them. Now, this little story actually refers to their religious worship. He's saying, in actuality, that Aholah and Aholibah were like Israel and Judah in Egypt in captivity. And there they learned idolatry, which God likens to harlotry. And the worship of other gods and images, oh, Egypt has so many gods. They worshiped everything. They worshiped the frogs. They worshiped the crocodiles. They worshiped the bugs. They just had so many gods. Everything was a god to them. And these girls had learned about idolatry and paganism in Egypt. And when they were taken out of the captivity, instead of turning away from those things, they continued to long for the pagan religion. And they started accepting the gods and goddesses of the countries that were around them. They made themselves to look like those women that were in those countries, who worshipped those idol gods. So they became so submerged in heathen worship that in the end, Israel, the bride of Jehovah, the chosen of God, took their children and made them walk through coals of fire and took their babies and offered them in the fire as human sacrifices to the gods of Moloch and Chemosh. Now, I have to take a minute and tell you about these gods, because these pagan religions are not so beautiful and exciting like people in America think they are. They've never seen the other side of the coin. Because missionaries went to all those countries, and as soon as the missionaries had any effect at all on those pagan countries, the first thing that stopped was human sacrifice. The second thing that stopped was fornication involved with the worship. And so now people in America who don't believe in Jesus and are getting interested in all of these religions, they think that there's something to offer them. They have no idea the horrible pit and the terrible trap that is on the other side of the coin here. And what they did, the god Chemosh was the god of Moab. You can read in the book of Ruth about Moab. And this god looked like a cow. He had the face of a calf and the body of a man. And he was sitting on a throne. And his arms were in his lap. Between his arms was a huge pit where they built an intense fire. And they would take newborn babies from the mothers and they would lay them in his arms and they would fall into the fiery furnace and be burnt up. All around this huge idol, they had drummers with drums and they would beat the drums as loudly as they could to cut out the sound of the mother's screams and cries while they offered her baby to the god. God described how that the women would paint their eyes, put on bracelets and fine clothes to entice all of their lovers. He describes it in Ezekiel 23. He describes it in Jeremiah. He describes it in Isaiah. And all the time, the accusation rings out from God, you learned it in Egypt. You learned it in Egypt. So today we're going to go to Egypt in our minds and in our studies, and we're going to find out exactly what did they learn in Egypt. In ancient Egypt, they wore sheer linen clothing that was cool and see-through. Some of you afterwards may want to look at these books. You can see in some of the books that the outline of their bodies was showing underneath their clothing. They had no shame. The children grew up naked in the houses, and the slave women were naked, and that's how they lived all day. And only the better-to-do people, the royal class or the high-class people, wore clothing. And they wore these sheer clothes that you could see through. They were very seductive. They used a palette of colors on their faces. Actually, in this one book I had, it showed a palette. It looked like an artist's palette with little containers of different colors, and they would spend many hours painting their faces. They would start out with a white lead foundation. It was made from lead and oil or lead and water, and they would put that all over their faces. And then they would use a red-orange ochre from the earth, and they would paint their lips and their cheeks with that. Then they used this coal or antimony, which we call mascara today, and they painted eyes with eyeliner and eyebrows and eyelashes. And I mean, they really painted them. They made these huge, you know, wings on the sides of their eyes. And even the men in the Pharaoh's court used makeup. Then they would use green and gray paint, and they would use it like eyeshadow. They ornamented themselves with so much jewelry that I'm sure that they were glistening and shining everywhere they went. They wore a lot of jewels, a lot of golden bangles, clasps and necklaces, earrings that were in the forms of little gods and goddesses. Amulets. Amulets were little boxes, and they would write a curse or a blessing in the box, you know, on a piece of paper or papyrus, and they would put it inside this little box, similar to a locket. And then they would wear this, and sometimes it was a blessing because they wanted to have children or they wanted to marry a certain young man. Sometimes it was a curse. if there was a girl that liked the same young man they liked, then they would wear a curse in their amulet that was against her, that would cause something bad to happen to her. This is witchcraft. And they would wear these amulets a lot. Then they had spangles, which were pieces of gold and silver that they would tie in their hair. And they would braid strands of gold and silver and beads or gold and jewels, whatever, into their hair as well. So they had lots of excessive jewelry. I want to just talk about this a minute. You see, the Egyptians believed that gold was the flesh of the gods. They believed silver was the bones of the gods. And they believed that the stars in the heavens were those people who had left this earth and gone to the afterlife. And they became stars in the firmament of the heavens. And so they really worshipped the night. It was a religion of the night, a religion of death, and a religion of darkness. Their life was consumed with studying about the afterlife and death. And it was a very death-oriented religion. And these jewels and jewelry that they wore, I looked through some of the books that I had, and you could go back and find where the Pharaoh's wives had no earrings on, because this civilization goes way back. And then you could see where they started wearing them. And I discovered that it was the Egyptians who actually started making a lot of jewelry. And the first jewelry that they made was actually little images of their gods and goddesses. The first earrings they made did not even hang from the ear. They hung from headpieces down. But then they pierced their ears and started to wear earrings in the ear. The first one I could find was a cobra, a snake, which was one of their most powerful gods. And this snake was woven through the ear with its head peeking out. The word earring, the first word earring, actually meant to conjure a magical spell. That is what earrings were called in the first place. Something that would conjure a magical spell. And I'm not just telling you this. This is in all the books. And anyone who studies jewelry, go to a jeweler who has studied the history of jewelry, they will tell you all of the first ornamental jewelry in the world came from idol worship. I didn't know that. And here I had lived all these years, and I was in Jordan. I did not know that jewelry evolved from pagan idols. But that's one of the things God wanted me to know when he told me to look for that book. And you know, I know there are a lot of wonderful women today who would not worship an idol for anything. And they wear earrings. But I'm sure they have no idea where those things originated. Did you know that in America, women didn't wear earrings, except for the very elite, rich ones that had to do with Europeans? In Europe and in Far East, in the Middle East, they wore earrings. But they were pagan countries, and that went along with their religion. But this country was started as a Christian country. And it wasn't until around the 1960s or 70s that you saw women en masse piercing their ears in the United States of America. It wasn't until there was an influx of Eastern Oriental religions that you saw all of these pierced ears. And now it has even entered into our Christian churches. And some of our churches in America, that their forefathers would have just rolled over in their graves if they knew their women were wearing pierced ears and earrings. But this came from paganism. It always went with it. Even in Genesis 35, if you read the story of Jacob when he was going to meet Esau, I had never seen this before, But after I learned this, it made sense. It says that they took their idol and hid them behind the trees, because Jacob said, you've got to cleanse yourself because we are facing great disaster today. Cleanse yourself so that you can have God's help. So they took their idols, all the servants or whatever that were with him, and they took the earrings out of their ears and put them with the idols and hid them together behind the tree. I never knew why they did that, but now I know. Because the earring was closely connected to the idol worship. And when they came out of Egypt and they took those borrowed from all of the people the jewelry, remember, they went to their neighbors and they said, borrow all this jewelry, and really it was payment for all the years of labor that they had not been paid. And everyone was giving them, whatever you want, just leave us alone because of the plagues. Remember that story? Well, actually, God didn't want them to wear that jewelry. That was wealth. That was gold and silver. It was money. It was wealth. And they deserved it for the years of slavery. And so they took it and they got into the wilderness. And what did they do while Moses was up on the mountain? They decked themselves with those things and they took them and made an idol, melted them down and made an idol like the idols they had seen in Egypt and danced naked around the idol. I'm telling you, jewelry and idols go just like this. I did not know that. But God told me, I'm going to show you something you didn't know before. So all of the first ornamental jewelry, all of it, was made in the shape of idols. Now these pagan women, these Egyptian women, also wore cones of grease on their heads. I have some pictures of that. And in this grease they had all kinds of perfumed products that would melt. And as this grease would melt, it would kind of come down on their sheer clothing and make it all the more seductive, and it would also give off a nice odor. This, I guess, was their first kind of deodorant, you know. But that they wore, and it was very overpowering. Now, I'm not telling you that we shouldn't wear nice perfume, but there are some perfumes coming out today that are actually made to be aphrodisiacs, and that's what Egypt was interested in. They were interested in all of those kind of things. These cones looked like little pine cones, either hanging down from the front of their crowns on their foreheads or else standing up on the top. Also, these priestesses, we can trace back beyond the Egyptian people. We can trace the use of makeup and jewelry beyond Egyptian people to the priestesses of the Egyptian religion. Now that's where you find it stops. And so actually in my studies I've found that the origin of makeup and jewelry traces directly back to the priestesses of pagan religion. They shaved their heads, they wore wigs, they painted their faces, and they tattooed themselves, some of them. They lacquered their fingernails with all these colors. And these priestesses actually waited in the temple for the men to come. And there were priests and priestesses. There were thousands of them. I've been to that temple. There's a picture of it in one of these books, the temple at Karnak. Brother Cedric took us there. And he told me some things I didn't know. He's Egyptian, you know, and he lives there, right near that temple. He said, Sister Reed, the young girls that wanted to get married used to come to this temple, and they would sit on the steps, and they would put their skirts out and sit on the steps and wait until a man came to worship. And if that man liked that virgin girl, he would throw money in her lap, take her into one of the recesses in this massive temple and rape her or commit an act of fornication with her. and then she was considered marriageable. You can't get much more debauched than that. And the priestesses, part of the worship in pagan religion, was that the priestesses would commit fornication with the men who came, and the priest would commit fornication with the women who came to worship. It was in their worship of their idol to commit these horrible acts, and even sometimes men with men and women with women. Now, these are things we have not been told in years past. I think because people just kind of didn't want to talk about those horrible things, and we didn't have a need to, and so it just was better left unsaid. In delicate society, it was something that was too shocking in a generation back. But we're living in a generation that is so submerged in this cesspool of all this sexual sin and all this terrible stuff going on, that we've got to speak plainly to our girls and our boys and let them know, where did all this stuff come from anyway? It came from paganism. And this world, these kids out here, if you have friends, any of you in school, and you have friends, or even some of you older ones that have friends that are interested in Eastern religions, you need to inform them about all of this. Because the devil's intent is to bring it back full force again. And he won't stop with just a little mantra. He won't stop with some yoga and all of that. His intent is to bring it around again till we have people involved in fornication and selling their souls, and we have people taking their children and offering them for human sacrifice. And I will tell you that there are cases of it in America today. Where do you think all of our children are going when they're kidnapped and never seen again? I talked to some of the pastors up in South Dakota in the Indian lands, and they told me that there are certain roads outside of their cities where they are told no one is to drive on those roads at night. And in these places, there are people, some of them officials in the government of the little cities and such. Some of them people you would never dream were involved in witchcraft. And they go to those areas and build their circles of fire, and they have their rituals of witchcraft going on right now in South Dakota and I'm sure other places in the United States of America. But one of their ladies got lost one night and ended up on one of those roads and saw the circle of fire herself. So I know it's not just someone's idea. It's going on now. And the devil is trying to take this country back. All the gods of the pagan religions of the Indian nations that were conquered when the Christians entered this country and came with their gospel of salvation and life, all those gods want their land back. And they're trying their best through the New Age religion and in our schools and in television and even in our news and everything. They're trying to get America to listen to them again and to come back to those lords and principalities and powers that are over all of these places. And I'm not just scaring you today. I lived there in Wyoming. And I lived right next to the medicine wheel as a young woman, and I wrestled with a particular spirit for 2 years. And he tried to kill my children. He told me he would kill them, and that night my son could not breathe for no reason. We had to take him to the hospital. I wrestled in prayer, and I fasted and fought this horrible voice. I had no idea what it was, but that town had been in the grip of this thing for years, and there had been no revival in any church in 50 years in Sheridan, Wyoming. And while we were fighting these things, and you know, fighting off, I was told I had cancer. My second child, the devil tried to kill him, told me that he was going to die, and told me I was pregnant before I even knew I was pregnant. This thing was horrible, but I knew I served a God that was greater. And I was not going to walk away from that thing because Jesus is greater. And I had his Holy Spirit. And in those years of wrestling and fighting that Lord, and I found out later who he was, He was the Lord of the medicine wheel, the most holy, sacred site of Indian religion in this area of the country. The Black Hills and the medicine wheel are the two most sacred sites. And I was sitting underneath his hill, his high place. But we defeated him. And God sent a mighty revival in that place. And everything that he did to stop us was just washed away by the power of God. There were two people that stood in our way and verbally said they were going to try and destroy us. Do you know that I went to the Lord and prayed about one? I said, Lord, this woman doesn't know what she's saying. She says she's going to drive us out of this city. She has no idea that we have the truth. But Lord, I don't know what to do. I can't fight this. You know we're here for you. And we're standing for you. Lord, just shut her mouth. The woman dropped dead. I was shocked. But I'm telling you, no one is going to stand in the way of the truth. And if we can realize what our enemy is, and how ugly, and how awful he is, and how he wants to destroy our children, then we can rise up and be the holy, powerful, godly women God wants us to be in this world. We've got to, women. We've got to. Our husbands can't make it without us. Our children can't make it without us. We have got to let God make us into powerful, powerful women. These women used contraceptives, sometimes from animal dung. And the priestesses of the temple practiced abortion since they were never allowed to have children. They were supposed to be reserved as prostitutes for the worship of their gods. The 20th century modern woman. Let's just kind of look at some comparisons here. A lot of the clothing that's coming out today is designed for comfort. And it's very lightweight. Some of it's see-through. I went recently to try and find a lightweight white blouse made out of cotton because it's so hot in the Middle East that I wanted a lightweight white blouse that I could take back to Jordan with me because I'm going back in the summer and I knew it would be very hot. I couldn't find one that wasn't so see-through that I couldn't wear it. They were all such sheer cotton and linen that, I mean, there's no way I could wear it unless I wanted to wear like a full, you know, slip of some sort underneath. And then that's real hot too. So I decided, no, I just won't buy these. But this is what's coming out now. It doesn't matter. Used to, it mattered. Even when I was a girl, it mattered. If you were wearing something that was very sheer, you had to wear something underneath it. Your mother would never let you wear that. And that wasn't just people in our churches. That was everybody that was a decent, upright person. Makeup is used today similarly to the makeup that was used in Egypt. All kinds of jewelry are being used. Like I told you, they're even coming out with the exact same pieces of jewelry that they used to use in Egypt. And this body piercing. Did you know, I have not found the book yet. I'm still looking for it. But there is a book written by a woman who was big in the New Age, and she left the New Age, and she found the Lord Jesus, and she was saved. And she wrote a book, and in the book she said that body piercing was always involved with evil spirits, and that by piercing the body, that they believed, these people, that that allowed a spirit to enter into you by piercing your body. And it would give you more power by allowing these spirits to enter through these places that you pierced. And so here we have these people today that are just going crazy. Pierced lips, pierced noses, pierced ears, pierced navels, and other places as well. It's unbelievable. What would make somebody do something so heathenistic and so much like the wilds of Africa? It has to be involved with spirits. That's the only thing I can figure, that anyone would do something so horrible and even let it happen to them. They have become involved with these spirits themselves. And the New Age is really pushing this. Various perfumes and new sensual oils are now available. Now they have coming out these oils that are supposed to be very sexy and sensual. Now, if you haven't seen them yet up here in Omaha, Omaha's kind of, you know, off the beaten track a little bit. But it's already in St. Louis, and you'll see them there. And there's a push to sell them for sexual reasons. It's already happening. Hair coloring, wigs were common. Now, in this day, we use all kinds of hair colorings in America. Women do. I don't, but women do. And back then, they used basically henna, which was red, kind of a red color. And they still use it in the Middle East. You hardly see a woman that has gray hair among the Arabic people. It's rare to see a white-headed woman because they always use either hair dye or henna. So when they get older, instead of going gray, they go red-headed. Today, we have whole studios. Just in 5 years, since I was here the last time, we have entire nail art stores that will give you the big, long, pointy nails that they used to wear in China in the dynasties with all the little jewels stuck in them. Oh, to me, they look like claws. You know, I would never, even if I were interested in that, would never want anything like that. But that's all coming back. And it all came from paganism. And it's all coming back. Now we have sexual counselors, sex books, sex stimulants of all kinds. You go in the store where the books are and just look, and it just will blow you away. Drugs are readily available for women. Just get a little nervous. Go to the right doctor, and they'll put you on Valium or anything you want, and you'll get hooked on drugs so easy. Drugs will just be that easily available for you. And psychic hotline. The psychic hotlines are horrible. We have psychics in the White House. We have psychics in the newspapers. We have psychics on the radio. We have psychics in the newspaper stands, the magazine stands, at the grocery store. Psychic predicts this, psychic that. Well, in Egypt, they had their magicians that they lived their lives by the advice of these counselors who were magic magicians. And now we're coming back to the same thing with our psychic. Oh, I have to talk to my psychic today. I don't know if I should do this or that. I have to look at the stars and live by the stars, just like the Egyptians. The horoscopes have been in the newspapers for as long as I can remember. And women drink and party ride along with the men. Sounds like to me that we are very much like the ancient Egyptian woman in America. Not you and me, but our society. Do you know, in one of the books that I read, I was really amazed at this statement. I wrote it down. Not until this century, the 20th century, did the use of cosmetics and jewelry, pierced ears in particular, become as open as in Egypt. That was in one of the books I read. It was not a Christian book. It was just talking about the history of makeup and jewelry. Well, now, let's look at what the Bible has to say about all of this. In Isaiah 3, verse 16, it says, "Moreover, the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go and making a tinkling with their feet, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret parts. In that day the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet, and their cauls, and their round tires like the moon, the chains and the bracelets and the mufflers, the bonnets and the ornaments of the legs and the headbands and the tablets and the earrings, the rings and nose jewels, the changeable suits of apparel and the mantles and the wimples and the crisping pins, the glasses and the fine linen and the hoods and the veils. And it shall come to pass that instead of sweet smell, there shall be stink, and instead of a girdle, a rent, and instead of well-set hair, baldness, and instead of a stomacher, a girding of sackcloth, and burning instead of beauty. The daughters of Zion, the women of Israel, had turned to pagan worship. And as part of the pagan worship, they had turned to the pagan fashion that went with it. Or maybe it was the other way around. Maybe they picked up the fashion first, and it led them right into the pagan worship. But it mentions here some specific things, and I'd like to just go through them quickly if we could. It talks about wanton women. Now that means women that are of ill repute, that are always lustful and looking for men, wanton. They go their wanton ways. It's an old word that they used in other generations, but it's kind of been lost now. Mincing. What it meant was they actually took little chains, little ankle bracelets, and they put them on their legs. And then they would take a little chain between the two ankle bracelets, and they would hook the two together. So they couldn't take very long steps. They would just be able to take little mincing steps because of the chain that had their legs chained together. And wanton also has another meaning. It actually in the Bible means to falsely set off the eyes with paint. It means to paint the eyes. So here are these women of Israel who were supposed to be godly, holy women. And they have adopted the fashion of the pagan countries around them. And they paint their eyes, wear these ankle rings that are joined with little bells hooked like a charm bracelet to their ankles. And when they walk, they make a tinkling noise. So they're walking and mincing as they go like this. And their heads are held high in pride and vanity. Can you get the picture here? And the Lord says, because I hate all of this and your proud and haughty ways, I'm going to take it all away from you and you're going to be stripped of everything. And instead of having a beautiful countenance, your face is going to be burnt. Instead of having your hair fixed nicely or have a nice headscarf or a head covering on, you're going to have baldness. And he just goes on and says, I'm going to let them take you away captive. I'm going to let them take you away captive. All through the Old Testament, this story comes back. Different stories with the same allegory here. So the calls were actually headdresses with little suns, little round ornaments around them. And there's a picture of those here if you want to see it later. The tires were neck ornaments that were like the moon. Have you seen those in some of the old Egyptians, these big, thick neck ornaments like a crescent moon? And the crescents were actually an ornament that was a crescent moon, and it was to the moon god. The crescent moon was always the worship of the moon god. Then the chains were pendants, hanging around the neck, dropping down the neck. Mufflers were veils that covered their face with just eye openings, and tremulous spangles of gold and such that would blow in the wind. The bonnets were turbans. The ornaments of the legs were the chains I told you about. The headbands were actually girdles. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me, but that's what the commentaries tell me, that when it says headband, they actually were girdles. And the tablets were little houses of the breath. Houses of the breath, what they literally were. They were like a little container that had herbs in it or sweet-smelling spices. And if they felt like they had bad breath, they would just blow in there and inhale some of that mint or whatever it was, kind of like garbanaca, you know? And then the earrings actually were little amulets, which had some of them, amulets had, I mean, anything to do with magical stuff. And they would sometimes have writings that would be carved in them, blessings and curses, whatever. And they would have magic formulas. And that was the first earrings. They actually hung from the headpieces down on the ear area and down on the neck. And then there were the nose jewels, which were usually in the left nostril, and the changeable articles of clothing. They had so many different articles of expensive, beautiful fabrics, these women that he's talking to. The mantles, fuller tunics with sleeves that were worn over the common clothes. Wimples, mufflers that were like a hood. Actually, a wimple is like what the nuns used to wear. If you remember back in the 60s when they started letting the nuns wear regular clothing. But before that, they wore these wimples. They fit so that just the face shows, and that's actually what a wimple is. The christening pins were money bags that they carried the money in. And there were glasses, little polished mirrors. I've seen some of these that the Bedouins still have. They're a little polished brass mirror, and they've got tapestry all over the back, a piece of cloth that's woven, you know, and it's set in that through little holes. And they hang, like, off of the belt of their dresses, and whenever they want to see themselves, they just pick up that little mirror and look at themselves and put it down and walk along and then pick up that little mirror and look at themselves. Oh, the vanity of all of this. And there were hoods that were actually like crowns or diadems. There were veils that covered all of them. And well-set hair, of course, they had so many different hairdos and so many ways of setting their hair. And most of the time they wove gold and silver and jewels into it to make themselves look rich and affluent. The stomacher was a broad-plated embroidered girdle. And that's the things that are written here. Can you get the picture of these women? Actually, I have some pictures that are from Jordan of the ancient costumes. And when I saw these costumes and studied this, I realized the pictures I have are the closest thing I've seen to it. So I hope you will come up here and look at them afterwards, because these really will show you what we're reading about right now. But the Lord says to them, all of these things I'm going to take away. And you think you're so beautiful, and you think that your life is so wonderful, and you've forgotten all about me. You've forgotten all about me. You've become haughty and proud, and I'm just going to strip you of all of this paganism. I want you to think about Satan and God for a moment. Satan hates God. He wanted to be God. And he was thrown out of heaven. And like I said yesterday, his ultimate goal is to destroy everything that God has made. He is the destroyer. He wants to destroy the earth. He wants to destroy everything. He wants to destroy you. And the reason he wants to destroy men and women is so he can hold it up like a trophy in God's face and say, look here. What I've done to your beautiful creation. Now, Satan would like nothing more than to take the woman, the beautiful, godly woman that God had created, and with her beautiful long hair, he would love to take that woman, make her all his captive. Now, if you were going to take someone to be a captive, like Ahola and Aholibah had been, and like God told Israel they were going to be taken away captive, and they were going to lose their noses and their ears, he told these women that your country is going to be laid desolate, and I'm going to take all of this away from you. And when they did, when the Assyrians came and took them captive, what did they do to them? They put chains on them. They stripped them naked. They pierced their bodies with nose rings and hooks. They took hooks, like fish hooks, giant ones, and put through their noses and attached them to each other and pulled them along. And they put earrings in their ears to make them slaves, to show that they were slaves. That was the symbol of a slave, an ear, pierced ear. And they took them away, bald, burnt by the sun, and that was their captive. Now, the devil wants to show that a woman is his captive. How can he do it? Put chains on her ankles, attach them with a little chain, put chains all around her neck, pierce her body, put all kind of things in her nose and ears, get her to wear clothes that are so immodest that she might as well be going naked. That's what he's done to a lot of women today. And don't you think he's not holding them up as his trophy and saying, see, this is what I did to your beautiful crowning creation, the woman. And she enjoys it. She's my willing slave. I've put my chains on her. I've pierced her body. I've got her going naked. I've got her wearing immodest clothing. I've got her doing all kinds of lewd acts. She's like an animal. And look, this is your creation, God. Do you see that? What the devil calls beautiful is never beautiful. You can fly into the city of Cairo, Egypt, and if you come in at night, it's the most beautiful city in the world. Such beautiful lights, 11 million, now they say 18 million, I don't know, people. It's massive. It's in a big delta, and it's just as far as you can see, beautiful lights, neon lights, colors, everything. It's one of the most gorgeous cities to fly into at night. But when you wake up in the morning, it is one of the dirtiest, filthiest cities in the world. And Egypt is a type of sin. Everything they gave us, we ought to throw it away. Because it has to do with sin, and it has to do with idol worship. And can you imagine how it makes our precious Lord feel? Just think, if you can, for a minute, how he might feel. Here he created us. He made us beautiful women to be the mothers of the children of all generations. He even came in the woman. He was born of woman. He was a child born of a woman. Jesus was. And he wants us to be like him, his beautiful women. What do you think it makes him feel when we pick up anything that has to do with idols? Don't you think that breaks his heart or upsets God? If you don't think that upsets God, go read the Old Testament. He said, you shall have no other gods before me. And he hated idolatry. And he said, all idolaters are going to have their part in the lake of fire. I don't want to put anything that has been tainted by idolatry on this temple of the Lord that he's given me in the Holy Ghost. I love him. And I love him enough, I don't want to break his heart by bringing idols into my temple. I know there's a lot of other idols we could talk about, other things we could do, but we're talking about this today. I'm not going to let the devil put anything on me. He's not going to get his chains on me. He's not going to get his pierced body parts on me. And he's not going to put on me all of his colors to attract men because I'm God's woman, and that's what I want to be till the day I die. I love the Lord today. Can we stand and just give Him our love? Could we just praise Him right now and tell Him how much we love Him? We would like for you to see some of our displays. This is a display of ancient costumes in the Bible lands. And many of these costumes were spoken about in the Old Testament with the ornaments on the headdresses and such, as you see. Each costume was from a certain city. Certain colors and designs were of one city and others of another. And as you see, they have not changed much from the ancient times. The Bedouin tribes, who are nomads, still wear the same biblical costumes that they wore in the Old Testament. This is a cosmetic dish made of mother of pearl and brass. This is a coffee pot that the Bedouins and the Arabic people make their coffee in. This is a little container for mascara or kohl, the lead substance that the Bedouin women put on their eyes. It's mentioned in the Old Testament. And they put the kohl inside and then the applicator pulls out. It is metal and they paint their eyes. This is a hand-blown glass overlaid with gold. It is a perfume container from Egypt. And these are just little dishes. These small containers actually came from Cyprus, and they hold wax that is perfumed, similar to the cones of grease that were used in Egypt in ancient days. The jewelry here, this one is made of Yemenite silver with Hebron glass, handmade glass from the city of Hebron. These are mother of pearl from Jerusalem area. This is actually Indian, but it is a small purse, which would let you know a little bit about what a crisping pin was in the Old Testament, little purses that were worn like an ornament. This is the wedding bracelet that we spoke about. It's just a simple imitation. They were much more beautiful than this and made of silver and carved by hand. This is a picture of the ancient temple at Karnak in Egypt, where many of the priests and priestesses invented the makeup and the jewelry we spoke about. And these are other publications showing some of the ancient dress of the Egyptians, the pyramids and such, some of the artifacts that were found in tombs, and just some of their gods and goddesses that they worshipped. This is a papyrus with a picture painted on it. It's a modern-day imitation of what papyrus was like. That was the paper that the Egyptians wrote their hieroglyphics on. And it shows you the Pharaoh and his bride. Some of these other pictures are showing you the temples, the artifacts, the gods and goddesses of Egypt, where all of these customs came from.